This is Carolyn Evers. It's a delight being here with you. You know, it's one of my highlights every week just to share things with you and you share things with us. And as you might surmise, I brought in a wonderful friend of mine who is seated nearby.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. It's good to be back on this side of the planet, all jet-lagged and trying to figure out which way is up.
I'm having trouble hearing.
Having trouble hearing me?
Huh?
Having trouble hearing me?
Well, yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you, and it's like foggy. Golly, I hope people are hearing me on the station. Okay, I understand that they're hearing me fine. That's great. Just a word to my friends. People send Richard and I requests of individuals that they want to connect with on the other side. And when I receive a message, I then connect with the person that they want to hear from to see if they are willing to be on the show. And then we bring them forth. And somebody sent in a request to talk to Hildegard von Bingen. And I was aware of Hildegard, had some of her music actually, but perhaps a lot of you out there are not familiar with her, and I want to give a little bit of information about her first before I ask Richard to connect with her. Hildegard was born in 1098, which would be considered the Middle Ages. And there were so many things about Hildegard. It seems like I've got a problem here. Anyway, she was born in Germany and was considered a religious teacher, prophetess, abbess. And we have to understand it was a time when, you know, women really didn't have too much to say publicly during the Middle Ages. And she really rose above that. She was an author, a counselor, artist, physician, healer, dramatist, linguist, naturalist, philosopher, poet, political consultant, visionary, composer of music. And the list just goes on and on and on. And I got this from the New World Encyclopedia. And I have a couple of the books that she has written, and I mean, she was quite prolific. And so it gives me great pleasure to be able to connect with her and bring forth information that she has. And so what I do now is I ask Richard to connect with her and to describe her energy, what it feels like. And so I ask you in the audience, place your attention either in your third eye or the heart center, and perhaps you can connect with her energy also. We have found that to be the case, that people in the audience can connect with these individuals if you put your attention in the two places that I mentioned. And so, Richard, if you'd be kind enough, I ask you now to connect with Hildegard and tell me and describe to myself and those in the audience a description of what her energy feels like.
Yes, Hildegard is here. And what I experience is a very heart-centered energy, quite a powerful, intense, focused energy, not broadly spread, not tremendously powerful, but very focused, perhaps might be a good word for it, feminine. Again, strong and clear, without, you might call it distraction almost. It's like there is this tremendous focus, heart-focused energy. And I mentioned in one of our recent previous shows that I experience the energy of these individuals across a spectrum, from left to right, if you will, across what seems like my physical experience, if you will. And I experience Hildegard very centrally, really very focused in the heart, although I would add perhaps slightly above the heart. So very, very interesting energy, very intense and focused.
Thank you, Richard. Hildegard said that she had some information that she wished to share with us about her times, the Middle Ages. So perhaps she's ready now to give this information to you, Richard?
Yes, let's see where she is. And she's here, and let us see what she has to say. I lived in a time when there was very little of what you might call freedom in the terms that you view freedom. The church was a very powerful force in that world. It was a time that actually aligned closely with the time when the Templars were active, and a time when the Inquisition was perhaps at its greatest power. And so many lived in fear of the church. I was born into a well-to-do family, but I was the 10th child, and it was not uncommon for daughters in particular born, you might say, down the ranks to be directed towards the church as a path for them. And for me this was no challenge, because I was drawn to my, you might say, mystical awareness from a very young age. I began to experience visions at a very young age, and in that time in Europe, in Germany, it was not a time when, unless you were connected to, for example, the Templars as I now understand them, or the Cathars and so on, that there was much other opportunity, if you will, for the expression of the mystical or the spiritual other than through the church. And strange as it may seem, even though in many ways the church sought to suppress these kind of skills, in an odd way the church was a little, you might say, schizophrenic about this, because if these things arose within its context, in other words, if you were part of the church and had these kinds of experiences, this was considered to be quite acceptable. But for individuals who were outside of the Catholic Church and began to have these kinds of experiences, then you were very likely to be branded a heretic and dealt with by the Inquisition. There is no logic to this, and I'm not suggesting it is justifiable. It is simply the experience that existed. And so many were aware that I displayed these skills from a young age, and perhaps my parents were directed, in a sense, to steer me in this direction for, in part, my protection. However, it was a path that I walked, and I really dedicated my life to the church in a sense, although more accurately I dedicated my life to God. And even though I recognized the limitations of the church's representation of its relationship with God, again I experienced quite a high level of freedom to express my own sense of connection with God through my mystical guidance. And it was a guidance that I struggled to accept in a way. I did not feel worthy of bringing this material forth, the material that I wrote down and had others write down, and also the music that I was guided to bring forth. I never claimed any of this material for myself. I simply saw myself as the vehicle by which this work came into human experience. I felt guided in all of the work that I did. And in a sense, even though you can look at my life as being challenging and difficult, my struggle really was not in my relationship with God or my acceptance of this. The struggle was really in accepting my own worth, in a sense, that I should have been given these gifts. And so it truly was, in a sense, a challenging time. And yet I never felt under threat from the church in any way for bringing these gifts forth, because I did it all within the context of the church. I was not seen, in a sense, as a challenge to the church, though there were certain individuals that sought to prevent me doing what I felt was mine to do. And my experiences with illness and so on that came forth to, in a sense, support me stepping forth in my mission are well documented. And so I wanted to give those of you listening to this that little background. I was a very humble servant of God, is how I saw myself, and in a sense, in my own way, a servant of the church, not the dogma of the church, but rather more the institution which enabled me to bring forth my gifts and to provide guidance and leadership to other women who joined the church at that time. And so I treasured the life that I had, even though it was challenging, a very cloistered existence, you might say, in the path that I walked. And I am humbled that some of my writings and my music have survived to your time and indeed seem to be treasured by some. And there are some who have felt that there were mystical aspects to my music, very, what you might describe, haunting music in a sense, often for the solo female voice and in a way very simple music. And I will say to you, as I said earlier, I was guided in the bringing forth of that material. And so, in part, I wanted to share with you a slightly different perspective than perhaps most will present to you as they come forth in these calls, any of those who were present in that time, because those who, for example, were amongst the Cathars or the Templars, or who were healers out in the community, were under very severe threat from the church. They were outside of this structure in a sense. Yes, the Templars on one sense were very much inside the church, and yet on another, when you understood what they were doing, they were very much outside of the model of the church. And for me, it was not a threat. In fact, it was very supportive in many ways for what I wanted to achieve. And so it is a somewhat different perspective. And my message for you today that I see has relevance to you from where I look at things is that it is important for all of you to find your own sense of truth within you, to find what that is and to trust that above all else. There are many who will come forth with a view to suggest that you should follow a path or to take on information or understandings which are different from what you find within yourself. And I would say that as I look at how life is lived in your time, it is clear to me that there are those that have worked very hard to distract you from that truth, in a sense, just as they did in my time. And I'm not encouraging you to step into the arms of the Catholic Church as a mechanism by which to investigate that truth. That is not my message. However, what I am saying to you is that you need to search for that truth within yourselves and bring it forth in your lives in whatever way that is expressed. And I will say that for most of you who are listening to this recording or this radio show are individuals that have a close connection with what is unfolding in your time. And so I encourage you to search out that truth within yourselves rather than seeking to understand what others might say about this time, because it is clear to me there is much distorted information, much misrepresented information which is available to you on that wonderful tool you call the internet. So much information there, and so little of which is truly accurate. And so many of you, I observe, reach out for answers to others, the writings of others that are carrying threads of truth and so much which is not accurate. And so you find yourself in this confused place, being uncertain about what to trust. And I encourage you to focus on connecting within, to begin to awaken your own mystical abilities if you have not already begun to. And I do not carry any judgment about what that should look like. In fact, many of you probably judge yourselves harshly on some level because your skills are not where you want them to be. But trust what you do bring forth. All of you carry an intuitive skill or ability within you. And this is active in everyone. It is not like visual experiences, clairvoyant experiences, and so on, where this takes some time to open up for most people. However, that intuitive ability is alive and well in all of you if you are willing to connect with it and to have it guide you through your life. So this is my key message based on my experience. Connect with your own inner truth, all of you, and to use that as your guide, because for everyone this is the most powerful tool that they have, and so few of humanity in my time or in yours actually take advantage of that guidance which comes through to you. So seek it out. Meditate. Connect with it in whatever way you feel is right. And open those doors and build your own trust of the truth that comes forth from within you. And so it is.
Thank you, Hildegard, and thank you, Richard, for bringing her message through. And I do have an interesting question, Hildegard, because looking at your lifetime, it seems like as a very young child, you lived within a convent. Your parents apparently took you to a convent, as I said, as a young child. So you really didn't have that much of an opportunity to learn about the world, yet the work that has come forth from you is so enormous, covering so many different topics and areas of expertise that it's hard to imagine what, for all intents and purposes, might be a relatively, shall we say, uneducated, is the way it looks to me, reading the history that we have today, an uneducated person, and coming forth with information that just seems like you read books of great knowledge. And so I might sound like I'm using a lot of words to ask this question, but I'm really doing this basically for those who listen also to put your life in context. So now that you're on the other side and you can look at that lifetime with an added perspective, I'm finally getting to my question. Was this your soul, your higher self, that was guiding you through all of this work? And that's one question I wanted to ask. In other words, where did this inspiration come from?
I became clear that I had displayed my gifts in many previous lifetimes. And so, in a sense, there was preparation. There was, you might say, soul history that was in place that assisted what I did in that lifetime. And you might call this, in its own way, guidance from my soul. But what I would say is that most of humanity is not aware that the skills that you practice over many lifetimes in that consciousness on earth, in a sense, strengthen your ability to bring those skills and abilities forth in a given lifetime. And so you might say some of what I was doing came forth because I had that soul history. And yes, I'm also aware that I was being prompted, in a sense, by my soul, my higher self, with its connection back to my monad, which is, as you understand, the totality of my soul as it was originally created. I am clear that that prompting was there from a very young age to encourage me to awaken these skills and abilities. And I'm also clear that I did have this very clear connection with my Creator, who I simply called God in my time. I am now aware that there are perhaps more appropriate terms one might use, but it all, in a sense, means the same. And so I was very clear that I had that open connection and that I had come into that lifetime to open up and to utilize that very direct connection with my Creator. And in a sense, that connection became, in its own way, a very powerful guide for what unfolded in my life.
Thank you so much for your answer, Hildegard, because in essence, you answered the second question that I had for you, and that was the talents or the skills that you're talking about, that perhaps these were memories or preparations or experiences that came from other lifetimes. That really was my second question, and you answered it, and I thank you. Where I am bringing this conversation is this. We spoke of the monad, which is sends particles to Earth that you might say, or I might say as I see it, individuals through a long path of history. So in a sense, you've had all these experiences preparing yourself for that lifetime as Hildegard. And my question now is involved around the monad, the soul itself. Does the soul prepare a, you might say, a basic mission? You at that time were to bring forth this information. Had your soul in the very beginning decided it would take this route and brought forth all of these experiences to put you in a place where you could bring forth this work? Is that how the monad works?
There are clear patterns which evolve for a particular monad. You might say particular skills or abilities or focus points, if you will, in experience that tend to be brought forth on a ongoing basis, in a sense, by a particular monad. And in one sense, you might say that my previous lifetimes had been in preparation for that one. But you might also say that all of the times that I have come forth upon the planet were in preparation for that aspect of my monad which is currently present upon your planet. It is, in a sense, an accumulation. And yes, you might say the mission I undertook in that lifetime was a powerful mission and one which I am excited to say I fulfilled very completely. And in a sense, my monad felt drawn to take on that mission because of the previous soul experience that it had, or I had, depending on how you view it, upon the planet. And so it was a mission that made sense, if you will, and it was a mission that it was on another level planned for some soul to fulfill. And so my monad agreed to send an aspect forth based upon the experience that it had, and it was also set up, that is, the soul aspect, the particles which were sent forth, in a sense, were commissioned, were programmed, were directed to focus on bringing particular skills forth. And this, in a sense, is part of how a mission is put together for a given group of soul particles that come forth to incarnate. As you understand, the higher self or soul understands the details of the mission and it seeks to direct that egoic self, if you will, in the unfolding of that experience in this consciousness. And so you might say there is this dance set up, and as I said, the ability for skills to be expressed in a given lifetime is greatly influenced by those lifetimes that have gone before, the experiences that have gone before. And so these things do influence the choices of future missions that might be undertaken by a particular monad.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Now that you are on the other side, do you work with other aspects that your soul sent to Earth? In other words, is there a communication between all of you?
There indeed is communication between all of us. We are all aware of each other, though for the most part we are walking very different paths. There are reasons at times to interact, and via our shared monad we in a sense share all of our experiences, not only those where we were incarnated on this planet, but also other experiences prior to the current moment, if you will. And so there is this sharing of knowledge and wisdom and understanding that is shared in common throughout all of these aspects. And that is best as I can describe it. I am aware of some cases where particular aspects from particular monads finish up working quite closely together to bring forth some work of common interest or to focus on a particular area of growth or a project and so on. So it does vary. Some souls have greater levels of cooperation between their aspects in this regard than others.
Thank you. Now, according to the information that we have, you were born around 1098, and I would suspect that from then to now that your soul has sent forth quite a few aspects. From your knowledge, about how many years elapses between times when the monad sends an aspect of itself incarnate upon this planet?
This is something that varies depending on a given monad, if you will, and its journey as it perceives it on the planet. As you are aware, there are situations where a monad may send forth several aspects concurrently, and you are aware of some cases of this upon the planet at this time. And so in such a situation, there is no gap. However, in other cases, there are specific events that are focused on, specific unfoldings. Humanity in general is unaware of the array of cycles which unfold upon the planet. But these are indeed programmed. And so certain types of monad, if you will tend to send forth aspects at those key times, though they may also send them forth at others. And so there are these patterns that can influence how particular monads may send forth aspects. It is difficult to generalize exactly how this looks. However, you might use something like 30 to 50 years as some guide, which suggests that most monads that are participating in the human experience will tend to have an aspect which is incarnated upon the planet almost continuously. It is not as simple as this as you would recognize, because the population of the planet has grown over time. And this in part is fueled, if you will, by further monads participating in the human experience, but also it is also somewhat fueled by monads sending forth additional aspects. So it is a complex picture with not a simple answer.
Thank you. I would like to pursue this a little bit more because I'm aware of cycles, as Richard is also, and you mentioned the word cycles. Were the cycles set up first and then the monads do their work within the cycles, or does the work of the monads set up the cycles? I wanted a little information as to how the cycles work and the monads work within the cycles.
For the most part, the cycles were set up long ago. They were, for the most part, are not set up by those monads that are sending forth aspects to participate in those cycles, though there are those monads that participated in the setting up of some of these cycles. So it is, again, a complex picture. However, for the most part, it is not monads that are incarnating, that are sending forth aspects to incarnate, that are actually determining those cycles.
From your perspective and the perspective of spirit, can you describe a little bit this cycle that humanity is experiencing now?
There are many cycles that humanity is experiencing now. And again, this is not well understood. For example, there is that cycle that you call the precession of the equinoxes, which is a 26,000-year cycle. This is a cycle that has a great impact on the human experience, and indeed the experience of all expressions of consciousness upon your planet. There is the cycle of human experience, which in a sense began with the fall in Atlantis some 13,000 years ago, which is effectively one half of that cycle of the precession of the equinoxes, and is ending at the end of 2012, which is the next time that that alignment occurs. So this is another cycle. There are also cycles of some 2,000 or so years in length, where you see major aspects of that being you know as Marietta come forth. And these, if you examine again, the precession of the equinoxes, each sign, if you will, lasts for a little over 2,000 years. And so you are about to enter the sign of Aquarius, if you will, progressing out of the cycle of Pisces. And so this, again, is a time when such an aspect will come forth. As you are also aware, there is the cycle of Brahma, which, even though for the most part humanity is unaware of it, is still a cycle that humanity is participating in. And this cycle that you know of as the end of 2012 has been aligned to match the ending of the ending of the outbreath of this cycle of Brahma and the beginning of the in-breath of this cycle of Brahma. It also corresponds with the ending of what you know of as the cycle of the dark, which is actually longer than any particular cycle of Brahma. And so you can see that there are many important cycles which are all coming together at this particular time, at the end of 2012. And humanity in general does not understand the power of these cycles, or indeed how they bound the human experience. By those words, I mean that humanity believes quite rightly that you carry a great deal of free will choice in terms of how you unfold your life experience. However, that free will is bounded by these major cycles. No individual upon the planet can escape the ending of the cycle which occurs at the end of 2012. No one can escape it. And really, it is a very simple choice as to whether an individual acknowledges their creator or they do not. And based upon that choice, they will participate in the ascension process or they will not. There are no other options that exist for that moment in time. And yes, you can say there is an aspect of free will that is active at that time, because you can choose one path or the other. Every individual upon the planet has that choice. But that is the scope of the choice. The status quo will not persist, because that boundary is a very powerful, powerful boundary. And so I have taken a moment to describe these cycles for you to an extent, because for the most part humanity does not understand them, nor their power and importance.
I would agree with you, and I thank you for the answer. Now, my next question really has to do with the cycles. What is the most important, you might say, mover or positioning of the cycles? Would that be the precession of the equinox?
I'm not sure I exactly understand your question.
Well, in other words, we have a lot of cycles, and there must be some pattern that these cycles can fit within. And I'm questioning how these cycles relate astrologically. And to me, the most interesting, or what seems to be the most important astrological aspect, would be the precession of the equinox, how the movements work in the cosmos, not in the cosmos, but in our galaxy. Is that what is determining what cycle is coming into place? Or is there another method?
As you experience the unfolding of life on your planet, the precession of the equinoxes is an extremely important driver. And what the ancients understood is that the movement of the stars and the planets is kind of like this clockwork unfolding within the sky. And it is something that, for the most part, humanity has lost connection with. But if you examine the ancient stories and myths and so on that penetrate most societies, most cultures on your planet, they carry common themes, and there are those who have examined these themes and recognize that there are some common threads that point to the power of the precession of the equinoxes to determine and to prescribe boundaries upon human experience. And so, in one sense, that is so. However, it is also useful to stand back from this and recognize that this moment that you're about to reach, where this date that you call the end of 2012, marked by the Mayan calendar and so many other things, that this, in fact, was chosen. It was created to be in alignment with the other two much larger cycles that I mentioned, which were the beginning of this in-breath of the cycle of Brahma and also the ending of the cycle of the dark. This alignment, this process, this gear wheel process in the sky, which sees the precession of the equinoxes bringing forth an alignment with galactic center at that date of December 21st, 2012. That alignment, in fact, was set up before this planet was created. And so, what determines what? As you say, in a sense, the precession of the equinoxes is determining the unfolding upon the planet, but really that unfolding was pre-planned. It was pre-ordained, you might say, to come forth at that time, fitting in with much longer cycles, which were set up a long, long time before your planet was ever created, or indeed your solar system was ever created.
Thank you, Hildegard. I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but you were talking about the in-breath and the out-breath of Brahma. Is that cycle what governs everything that is going on cyclically in the cosmos, or is that affecting, it just seems to me that that is affecting the entire cosmos, and the entire cosmos is working on that cycle of the intake and outtake of Brahma. Is that true?
That is so. And it is also important to recognize, as I mentioned before, that there is this, what I termed the cycle of the dark, which is also ending at the end of 2012. And that cycle is longer than any cycle of Brahma in your cosmos. And I will say to you that that cycle is actually imposed upon your cosmos. It actually is a cycle which, in a sense, has ordained the timing of this cycle of Brahma. And so there are many forces at work, you might say, that have this extraordinary clockwork unfolding of what you might call time actually get played out. And so within your cosmos, it is very clear that the overriding force, if you will, of cycles is the cycle of Brahma, because the cycle opens. Before a cycle opens, there is no cosmos to speak of. And one of the roles of that soul that you know of as Marietta, the one which sent Yeshua to your planet, one of the roles of that soul, that monad, as you understand, is actually to open and close the cycles of Brahma. And so when the cycle is closed, all souls, all expressions of that creator being, all there is, are all returned to that same central point in the center of the cosmos. All souls are folded back. It is not that they entirely lose their individuality. They, in a sense, are like droplets within the ocean of all there is. And as the cycle is unfolded, the next cycle, so once again, in a sense, the souls come forth for a new round of experience. This is how it is unfolded.
Thank you, Hildegard. I appreciate what you're telling us, and it's information that we have received also, and it's wonderful to hear you bring this forth. In your opinion, what was the purpose of the dark and the cycle of the dark?
It is a complex question, and I say it is not something that I entirely understand. It is, as I at least am aware, something which had its origins outside of this cosmos. But my purview, if you will, is restricted to this cosmos, and so I do not entirely understand how these things arose beyond this cosmos. What I am aware is that it was an influence on the creation, the setting up, the structuring, if you will, of this cosmos and how it has been unfolded, and that I do understand. I, for my part, do not see a real purpose. Some upon your planet, I know, argue that you need to have the dark, the experiences of darkness, if you will, to truly appreciate the light. And I will say to you that having beings or expressions of consciousness which attack and interfere and indeed in some cases destroy other expressions of consciousness, I do not see as being a necessary contrast by which to appreciate what you might call the light. There are many ways to generate contrast of experience, and I, for one, do not accept that perspective. I am aware that it is not necessary for this to exist, and indeed that is implicit in the notion that there is an ending of this cycle.
Hildegard, we're amazingly getting to the end of the radio program, and I want to thank you in a very special way for coming and giving us all of this beautiful information. There are so many more questions that I have, and would you be willing to come another time and give us more of this amazing information that you have?
I would be willing to come forth if you so desire. However, the questions that you are asking me at this time are really questions that so many souls on my side of the veil, you might say, have the ability to answer. It is not something that is special to me, though I am very willing to come forth in service and answer any questions that you may have.
Again, thank you so much, Hildegard. We appreciate you being here and sharing with us this valuable information. And I would like to thank you in a very special way, Richard, also, for bringing forth Hildegard's information, which I think was so very, very valuable. And we have about 4 minutes left of the show. Amazing how an hour goes by, isn't it, Richard?
Truly.
What I would like for you to do, if you are willing, is we now have 3 minutes. Take those 3 minutes, if you will, and give our listeners a little idea of what we have on the drawing board and also how they could get information about our future radio shows.
Sure. Well, if any of you are listening that are not subscribed to our mailing list, then I encourage you to go to the 2012countdown.com, the 2012countdown.com, and enter your name and email address on the top or bottom of any page on that website and join our list. And whilst you're at that site, one of the things I encourage all of you to do, if you have not, and even if you have, perhaps to revisit the page which I've placed there, which has a collection, or more accurately, a selection of our YouTube videos. I've put on there just a small selection. There might be 10 or so, I can't remember exactly, of the some 105 or something we currently have up. And those particular videos provide you with, in my view, an overview of the information that we've been given from various sources to paint a picture of what we've been given to understand about what is unfolding. And if you haven't been through those, I encourage you to go through them. And even if you have and are a little uncertain, it would be useful to revisit some of those. So I encourage you to go through that because it will help you understand and connect with what we have been given. And so the drawing board, man, what has the drawing board got upon it? Well, I have mentioned the videos which we have been working on and the material we've been bringing forth from the Templars, and there are a couple of previews that we've packaged up into our little Walkman offer for October. And you can participate in that offer by buying either at least $50 worth of ebooks and other products from us, and you'll go into a draw. Or alternatively, if you buy more than $600 worth of product from us of various sorts, from our calls that we do, the soul healing sessions and the right brain magic work and so on, and any of our other products, if you purchase from us $600 worth of product, then you will get one of those Walkman packages. And it's quite fascinating, the material which is on there. As I mentioned, a couple of pre-release videos and some meditations that we have never released, a range of other recorded material, some of which is available if you know where to find it on some of our websites, others not. Quite, I think, some quite special material. So that's perhaps the exciting work at the moment, and we really do look forward to bringing forth that material from the Templars because it is really quite different from anything else that has ever been shared about who they were and what they were about.
Richard, we're up to the wall, so to speak. I want to thank you again, a very special thank you for what you have brought forth tonight. And I want to thank our listeners for being out there, making all of this interesting. And keep sending in your requests for the radio show and also questions for our newsletter that Yeshua Answers, which is just magnificent, I do believe. And so, Richard, I'm saying to you good night. Thank you. And good night to our listeners also.
Thank you, Carolyn, for the wonderful work you do, and good night, everyone.